Good morning, church.
Good morning.
I know most of you, when you saw this topic, we're talking about our commitment to creativity. I know when you saw this, you probably thought this wasn't going to be a message for you because you're not creative, and that's not your gifting, so this sermon won't really apply to you. And many of you probably thought you knew how this was going to go anyway. I would probably just say, hey, if you're creative, use your gifts for God. Sermon done. I'm not going to do that, but I'm also not going to stand up here and tell everyone that they're creative. You know, I'm not going to be the mother and father who listens to their children singing and say, that sounds beautiful. And then in 25, they go on American Idol and find out that they've always sounded awful. But perhaps in some ways, I think we've put the idea of creativity in a box and we've missed the entirety of what it means, especially for the Christian. I think it means a little something different for those of us who are connected to the Creator himself. Now, when I was first given this topic of creativity, I had so many wonderful ideas that mostly concerned bashing things I don't like and don't think are very creative. And in the Christian realm, there's an abundance of such things. I remember being a kid and watching a TV show that was a Christian show, and before it even got to the Jesus part, I'd be like, Mom, is this a Christian show? She'd be like, how do you know? I'd be like, because it's awful. The acting is horrendous. Who produced this? Did they get any money? And I kind of feel like that's the way it's gotten better, but Christian art has always kind of been behind things, you know? I remember they used to actually market Christian bands like Designer Imposter perfume. Do you guys remember that perfume? It'd be like, if you like Calvin Klein, one, you will love Designer Imposter, uno. And only $5 at 7-Eleven. And they would do the same thing with Christian music. They'd be like, if you like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you will love Audio Adrenaline, the Christian version of them, who is not as good. A15 didn't know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers were. They were like, why are we talking about food now? I thought we were talking about art and sound. I don't know. And I was like, who's talking right now? But we are directly connected to the Creator of all things. And yet we kind of follow along behind the world's way of doing things and try to mimic what they do. And I always felt like we should be leading the way. I still feel that way. We should be leading the way. And that's the main point. We are connected to the Creator of all things, the one who made everything from nothing. And all of us know him. And so we're connected to him. So we have the ability to be creative, just maybe not in the way that you're thinking. When I begin any sermon, the first thing I typically do is if there's a word that I'm preaching on, I typically just look it up to get a deeper understanding of it. And I'm just going to walk you through kind of how I create a sermon. And anytime you come across anything in the Bible, I mean, I think a lot of times we know what a word means, but if you look at it, it'll have a few different meanings that help give us that deeper understanding that can kind of open our eyes to things we didn't know. So the definition of creativity is a state or quality of being creative, which explains it all, really. I love when they put the word that you're trying to define within the definition. You're like, oh, okay, that's perfect. So the second definition is the one I like, and it's the ability to transcend traditional ideas, rules, patterns, or the like, and to create meaningful new ideas, forms, or methods. Now, many people probably wouldn't consider Jesus to be very creative if we just look at his earthly accomplishments, but this is exactly what he did. He thought beyond the men around him, just as we have the ability to do if we, like Jesus, know where to go, which is to God, to his word. So that's where I went next. I got a concordance. Do you guys know what a concordance is? It's like an old version of Google. So we actually gave the kids at youth a bag with a concordance in it. And they were like, what is this? This is genius. And then the next day, they're like, I lost mine. I'm glad we bought them for you. I'm just kidding. They were really responsible. They did. Most of them kept them. But so I looked up this word, creativity, in the Bible. And when the verse that kept coming up is Exodus 35, right? I mean, that's what everyone assumed it was, right? Which is where God calls all the craftsmen together to build the tabernacle, the ark, fit it in again, the altars, the priestly garments, etc. And this actually goes through chapter 40. So we're just going to read 35 through 40. Just kidding. We do have a lot of reading today, though. Just get excited. But I'm not going to do all that, but I do want to zero in on a few verses, because this isn't even the one I'm going to use. But it's Exodus 35, if you want to follow along, through 36:1. It's very short. Exodus If you don't know where that is, I'll do what I do with the youth. It's Genesis, Exodus, second one. So 35:35. He has filled them with skill to do all kinds of work as engravers, designers, embroiderers in blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen and weavers. All of them skilled workers and designers. So Bezalel, Oholiab, and every skilled person to whom the Lord has given skill and ability to know how to carry out all the work of constructing the sanctuary are to do the work just as the Lord has commanded. So it says in this verse that God had given them the skill and ability to do what needed to be done, but then he gives them one more instruction that's the most vital, even more important to this endeavor than their own abilities. He says they must do the work as the Lord had commanded. This is kind of where we get hung up, doing the work just as the Lord had commanded us to, because his ways are a little too creative. They transcend our own ideas and thoughts, our own methods, and that causes anxiety and fear. It requires a little too much trust on our part to do it the way he wants it done. So we do things the way we've seen them done before, the proven method, the way other people do them. And we miss out on the creativity that the Creator is trying to lead us in. Today we're going to look at the crazy creative way God does things and what happens when man will just do the work as the Lord has commanded him. So we're going to read a story in Joshua. It's 5:10 through 6:17. And as I read it, the more I read it, the more I realize how incredibly long it is. But it's very entertaining. So if you'll turn to Joshua 5, we'll read a story of Joshua everyone knows. And it's circumcision and Passover at Gilgal. I'm just kidding. You should read it though, it's a tearjerker. So Joshua 5:10 through 6:17. On the evening of the 14th day of the month, while camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, the Israelites celebrated the Passover. The day after the Passover, that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened bread and roasted grain. The manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate the produce of Canaan. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. Joshua went up to him, because that's what you do when you see a guy with a sword, and asked him, "Are you for us or for our enemies?" "Neither," he replied, "but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, "What message does my Lord have for his servant?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone straight in." So Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the ark of the covenant of the Lord and have 7 priests carry trumpets in front of it." And he ordered the army, "Advance, march around the city with an armed guard going ahead of the ark of the Lord." When Joshua had spoken to the people, the 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets before the Lord went forward, blowing their trumpets, and the ark of the Lord's covenant followed them. The armed guard marched ahead of the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard followed the ark. All this time the trumpets were sounding, but Joshua had commanded the army, "Do not give a war cry, do not raise your voices, do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout, then shout." So he had the ark of the Lord carried around the city, circling it once. Then the army returned to camp and spent the night there. Joshua got up early the next morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord. The 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets went forward, marching before the ark of the Lord and blowing the trumpets. The armed men went ahead of them and the rear guard following the ark of the Lord while the trumpets kept sounding. So on the 2nd day, they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. They did this for 6 days. On the 7th day, they got up at daybreak and marched around the city 7 times in the same manner, except that on that day, they circled the city 7 times. The 7th time around, when the priest sounded the trumpet blast, Joshua commanded the army, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city and all that is in it are to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall be spared, because she hid the spies we sent." So the story of Jericho actually starts in chapter 6, but I wanted to start in chapter 5 to note two things. One is where they are located. Okay, they are located in Gilgal. You can see this little city down at the bottom, that mound, that's Jericho. And then that little white dot to the northeast of it, that's Gilgal. Okay, it's 2 miles northeast of Jericho. And Gilgal is going to serve as their temporary center of government and worship during their invasion of Canaan. Not just for this, but the entire invasion of Canaan. The second thing I want to show you is what God does here. God is about to do something amazing for them. He's about to take them into the promised land, the land they have been waiting for. And they need a little kickstart, though. They're right outside. They need a little kickstart. And God provides that little kickstart for them. He provides for them by not providing manna anymore. He provides for them by not providing. He forces them into the blessing. Sometimes God has to do that. He has to force us into the blessing. Sometimes desperation is the only way we will actually suck it up and try to do it God's way. So an angel visits Joshua, not just any angel, but the commander of the army of the Lord. And maybe God knew that Joshua needed to see a military presence before he actually tells him the plan. Okay, maybe if God just showed up and was like, here's the plan. You're going to walk around. Listen, Joshua might have been like, oh my goodness, God doesn't know anything about military strategy. So he sends somebody who, like, obviously a military presence, be like, look, I'm a military man. I know what I'm doing. This is the plan. We have to remember what is at stake here for Joshua. There's a lot at stake. Jericho is a strongly fortified and strictly guarded city. Joshua had to realize the disgrace that's going to come if he stumbles here at the threshold. This is the beginning of the campaign. Okay, it's an important battle. The Israelites' first major battle. What happens if they're defeated? Will they continue to take the promised land? Do they give up? They decide not to take it again. It all hinges on this one battle. But instead of focusing on what could be or focusing on his fears, Joshua puts his trust in God. And we see it here right at the beginning. As a sign of respect, when Joshua comes before the commander of the armies, he falls to his knees. He bows as a sign of respect. And then the commander tells him to take off his sandals because he's on holy ground, and he does. Now note, this is the same thing that happened with the last leader, Moses. He was commanded to take off his sandals. He bowed before the Lord told him his crazy plan. And now it's happening again, and we see how God chooses his leaders. Who will listen? Who will follow? Okay, and the battle is won right here when the leader shows that God is the ultimate power and authority. When he follows God, and that's what gives them the victory, okay? Because he's willing to do the work just as God commanded. So God tells him, hey, I've given the city into your hands, and maybe he needed that guarantee, but when he hears the plan. But then he sends him out to do what he's commanded him to do, okay? Can you imagine Joshua having to go back and then tell his commanders and his leaders what the plan is? I'm sure they were pumped. Have you ever watched? I watch a lot of football, and every time someone makes a good play, they shout, "Let's go!" They're like, "Let's go!" It's just funny. I don't know why that's the thing that gets people pumped up. Maybe he went back and shouted, "Let's go!" like 10 times, and it still didn't work. We were watching this one game where it was the Cowboys. I hate the Cowboys. I don't think I ever talk about anything I like. I hate the Patriots. I hate the Cowboys. You probably don't even know what team I like. Doesn't matter. But Daisy loves the Cowboys, so we'll watch the games. And I was watching sometimes before the game, the offense gets together and the captain tries to pump everybody up. And the defense gets together and the captain tries to pump everybody up. And we're watching the defense, and like this guy's going like, "They're in our house, and so we're going to fight them, and we're going to scratch them, and we're going to bleed." And I just pictured this going like that, where I'd have been like, "Yeah, we're going to fight. Hold up. We're going to scratch them? Did you say we're going to scratch them? That's what my sister did to me." You know, and somebody's like, "Dang, I just trimmed my nails yesterday. I didn't know I was going to need them for this football game." So now, obviously, the Israelites are pumped up because there's no way to leave this conversation without being pumped up. So now we're going to jump to the other side of the battle and see what the Jericho people are like, all right? This is what Jericho looks like today. It is a mound of dirt. If you go to Israel, many people don't see this on the tour because, as Didi says, once you've seen one mound of rocks, you've seen them all. Okay, but this is what the city looked like then. This is ancient Jericho, okay? Now, the city of Jericho was built long before Joshua was even born. It's one of the oldest cities in the world. In fact, the Canaanite, it's like a symbol of power and strength, okay? In fact, the Canaanites considered this to be invincible. And this is the place they're going to attack first, okay? So just to kind of give you what it looked like, where I'm standing right here, if we were to go from the ground to the center, the highest point, that's about 25 feet, roughly. That is how tall the walls were, okay? And from here to the exit door, that's how thick the walls were, okay? Just to give you an idea. That's how a lot of times in the Old Testament you'd see, like, people had houses on the walls because they were big enough that you could actually do that. Okay, so this is a fortified city, okay? And the guards can see for miles from where they're standing. And this is the place they're going to attack first, the place everyone considers invincible, okay? And the Jericho people, the inhabitants, were just as hard as their walls. They had agreed to never surrender, not so much as make a sound of parley. No one would go out to treat for peace, and no one was allowed in to offer peace. When it says the gates were shut and no one was allowed out, no one was allowed in, that's what it's saying. It said no one was coming in to offer peace and no one was going out to ask for it. It's war or nothing, okay? They weren't scared of anyone and they weren't scared of these Israelites. They had, of course, heard the stories of the Israelites and their God, but they saw Israel's God as a nature God because he had parted the Jordan. And they saw him kind of as like a war god because he had defeated some people in open battle already, but they didn't consider him to be a fortress god because he needed to be a fortress god to take a fortress, obviously. They didn't think he could prevail against a walled city, which is kind of dumb because I think if he's a nature god, I would have been like, hey, this city sits on rocks, which is nature. Whatever. But they weren't scared of God, okay? And so the Israelites besieged the city. Behind the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, which we read, these silent men of war walk around the city once a day for 6 days, and then seven times on the seventh day, all the while the priests blowing their horns and trumpets. Now remember, they're stationed in Gilgal, which is 2 miles away. So before they even walk around, they have to walk 2 miles there, walk around 2 miles back. And they're not just walking around the walls because they have to stay away from the bow and arrows, so they're staying out of range. So it's a long walk, and they're carrying military equipment. Ugh, would have been awful, okay? But, and it sounds crazy. Imagine how this looked. Imagine how this looked, like the guys walking around, like, bah, bah. Oh, it would have been so funny being on the walls till the last day. But you would have been like, oh my gosh, look at those guys in their purple outfits and carrying that thing, that box. But this doesn't just sound crazy. This looked crazy. It looks crazy. And it defied all known war tactics. And when I say that, like, they open no trenches, they erect no batteries, they make no battering rams, they make no military preparations whatsoever. But they do the work as the Lord had commanded them to. Now, they could have done the work as God commanded them to and made a battering ram just in case, right? Be like, we're obeying God, but just in case. But they didn't. They just did the work as God commanded them to. And it couldn't have been easy. It doesn't just sound crazy to the people of Jericho. It sounds crazy to them too. It doesn't just defy all known war tactics of the enemy, but their own war tactics. These 6 days of walking around is going to try their faith, it's going to try their patience, and it's going to try their obedience. Where they continue to observe a precept which to human thought seems absolutely foolish to obey. This seems foolish to obey. Would they actually believe a promise that seems absolutely impossible as they continue to walk? As they continue to walk, they are going to look ridiculous. And don't think that their enemies weren't going to let them know it every minute that they did it. This isn't just 7 days of walking, but 7 days of walking under the scorn and jeers of their enemies. Could they bear the reproach of their enemies and patiently wait on the Lord for their salvation? Now remember, their time is precious. Their time is precious. They have to take this entire land. They've been wandering for 40 years, and then they went to look, and then they didn't decide to take it. And so here they've started. And once you start a campaign, you better get moving, because every minute they waste in Canaan, the next people have time to prepare. Okay? So time is precious. They have a great deal of work ahead of them, yet they are lingering here in Jericho, walking around, making no progress whatsoever. And there's no evidence that anything was happening. The entire time, there's no evidence it's doing any good. Now, maybe if they'd walked around the first day, you know, and like a brick fell, right? And then the second day, you're like, oh, two more bricks. You know, it'd be like, oh, something's happening. Nothing happened. The entire time, they walked in circles, doing just as the Lord commanded them to. But if you are expecting deliverance from God as they were, then you better expect it in his time. And his time does come. In Exodus 14:14, the Lord had told them as they ran from the Egyptians, the Lord will fight for you. You need only be still. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still. And so that's what they did. They let him fight for them. And what happens when we do the work as the Lord has commanded us to do? We're going to go all the way back to Exodus again, where they built the tabernacle, and see what happens when they finished building the tabernacle just as God had commanded them to. And this is in Exodus 40. It's verses 34 and 35. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses could not enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. When they're done building it, and they do everything just as he commanded, the glory of the Lord falls. And after the Israelites walk around the city just as God told them to, the same thing happens. The glory of the Lord falls and it breaks down the walls that didn't look like they were going to fall. They fell down and everyone went straight in. You could show that picture of Jericho as they saw it with the walls. This caption reads, "Archaeological excavations reveal that Jericho was violently destroyed sometime toward the end of the Bronze Age. The walls seem to have been thrown down by sudden force, as if by an earthquake." It's crazy. It gets crazier. "Charred wood shows that what was left of the city was burned. Excavators have also found food supplies buried in the destroyed city, which shows it was not captured by siege." Meaning they didn't spend a long time in there being surrounded without food, because basically their enemies walked around them seven times. We are connected to this same God, the same God who brought victory his way. We have that same connection, and he brings about his victory in his way and his time in every single situation. In this instance, following the Spirit of God, following the instruction of God, it led to a creative and ingenious battle strategy that not only decimated the city of Jericho, but also struck terror into the hearts of every Canaanite who heard the story. Everything that didn't make sense in the beginning makes so much sense now, right? This is like the biggest city that people thought was invincible. Like, if I was the commander, I'd be like, let's take some smaller places, okay? We can get more materials. We'll get some people that we can enslave and help them build. They can help us build battering rams and stuff, right? We'll build camaraderie. We'll get a little bit excited. But no, they take the big one first. The biggest one first, but when they do it God's way, imagine this story spreading through the land and saying, these Israelites that came, they defeated what we thought was invincible and they didn't even do anything. What happens when they do something? God had a plan and it was bigger and better than theirs. And it was beyond their understanding. We are called to be creative, not just in the arts, but in everything we do. Everyone in here has the ability to transcend traditional ideas, forms, and methods because we know the one who created them and we know the one who defies them. What we need to remember as a people is where we get it from. Will we do things his way? Will we do things his way when it doesn't make sense? or it doesn't seem like anything is happening. We keep our hopes in a promise that seems impossible. Even when it's unproven, this isn't the way people do things. This isn't the way it's done. Will we trust him? Will we see what amazing things he can do when we let him have control? All of it. When we just get on our knees and say, what have you commanded us to do? And we will do it, just as you've said. Will we get to see his glory fall? What would have happened if they had stopped walking on day 4? What would happen if they stopped walking on day 7, on the 6th time around? When I think about myself, I might have quit on day 2. I'm a quitter. I'm like, man, can we do shifts? Let's do shifts. I'll do day 3. But what would have happened? What would have happened when we are obedient, when we are faithful, and when we are patient, that he will do as he said he would do what he said he would do? When we trust him, we see his glory fall. But we have to ask ourselves, will we wait upon the Lord? Will we do it his way?